Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
You know, before I get to this report that was out earlier today, Jake, I gotta say, I'm shocked you haven't mentioned the 1987 Sheepdog on air yet. You and Curtis have been, like, super nice this morning. Like, what's up? Are you guys okay? You haven't made fun of, you know, me once, really.
No, I just got my little, you know, joke in early in the day. So I figured I'd leave it at that.
Oh,
I
that's mean, very kind.
It was a really good one.
Yeah.
Because it was pouring down rain this morning. And, Stacy, you decided to bring the sheepdog purse in today. And,
yes.
And Jake, you asked Stacy...
I asked her if, when it gets wet, if she has to shake it around.
Like the purse, you shake it like a dog would shake itself off.
Yeah.
The answer
is, I don't know how, like, does it get damaged when it gets wet? Like, how do you dry it?
I don't know. I've never.
Is it shake dry?
Do you have to use, like, dog shampoo to clean it?
I mean, those were the questions that were swirling on in my mind, and you didn't really have a good answer for me. So.
I know.
I just thought I'd leave it at that, but it's good to see it back. We did miss it.
And I thought you missed it. I think
we
you
were
guys
fearful
make fun
that
of it.
It would never reappear again.
You guys
yeah,
make fun of it, but
happen.
I think that it had a you had a an 87 sheepdog shaped hole in your hearts when I didn't bring it back for a while. I feel like you guys have bonded now.
Well, yeah, we also still had some jokes to get off this morning, so that's why we really missed it. We still had a couple more in us.
All right, if you're just now joining us, there was a report. It's really kind of like a bullet point at the end of an article that was written for ESPN between Jeremy Fallon and Dan Graziano, and they're looking at all the openings around the NFL with head coaching positions. And so at the end, it was like, hey, anything else you want to get off your chest about what's going on around the rest of the league? And Jeremy Fowler included a note. I'm just going to read it. He said, the feeling in some league circles is that Pete Carroll's safe. He's not ready to retire, and the Seahawks would have to have major guts to fire a legend outright. But it might be time for Carroll to concede personnel final say to John Schneider. The two work together seamlessly anyway, so the transition would be easy. And the move would embolden the personnel staff that sometimes feels handcuffed by coaches' preferences. Which led to very natural questions like, is this a good or bad thing for the Seahawks? Is it good or bad news for Russell Wilson? How involved might Carroll still be? Would we have a different opinion of the Seahawks last several drafts if young players had played sooner or stayed healthy? And maybe the most important one, is there going to be much of a difference at all if Carroll has always said that he and John are in lockstep with team building? They've worked together hand in hand, side by side for a decade. Are we even going to see that much of a difference?
Well, the one question that pops in my head as I'm just thinking about it, Stacey, is what have we heard about Jody Allen, though, in terms of her relationship to the media?
Doesn't talk.
Yeah, but it's been non-existent. So it's like, where is this coming from, right? Like, Jeremy Fowler, very well sourced. Dan Graziano, Adam Schefter. You know, there's certain guys that you list that when they put stuff out, you listen to because they're well sourced. And when things like this get put out there, it's like, okay, this is interesting. Where is this coming from, right? And that's something that I am curious about. As you know, we're trying to find clarity as to what exactly the leadership structure is going to look like with Seattle, and what the direction is going to be for the future and for the coming years here with this franchise. I don't know. It's just a question that was popping in my head as you were bringing up all these different questions.
Can you guys imagine if I was like, oh, me? Oh, I actually texted Jeremy the other day and I just kind of threw out an idea. I wanted to see what would happen. You know, I wanted to feel like an insider, like a blue check person. And
Jeremy was like, it must be true. Stacy said it. She must be true. Someone with a sheepdog purse has to have well-sourced information.
Unverified, you know, you can't afford a sheepdog purse without those kinds of sources.
That's exactly right. Do you know how many sheepdogs had to die so that I would be able to have that sheepdog purse? Many. Dozens, probably.
You think so?
No. You know, the way I look at it is less
about... Careful, you're going to get PETA on your hands.
The way I look at it is less about like how's the relationship going to change or what's going to happen, because I don't know that we're going to see much of a difference. Now, we did talk with Brady Henderson of ESPN, and Brady said, now, make no mistake, there might have been some different decisions made had John Schneider had final say in the past. He pointed to the Rashad Penny pick, where he said the understanding was that John Schneider or his staff might have wanted a guy like Nick Chubb, but that, you know, they ended up going with Penny, you know, because Schneider doesn't necessarily have final say there. And then I think there's probably other picks that, you know, that they do. I don't know. I've always wondered, like, do they trade off and say, hey, I'll take your word for it on that guy? I don't know. I think the way I look at it is whatever that working relationship is now or whatever it becomes. So let's say that this report's true and it becomes with John Schneider getting the final say. Whatever it is and whatever it becomes, the end result, I think, must be, Jake, that you have more contributions from younger players, because you've gone from being a developmental program to a veteran-heavy roster, which is a tough and expensive way to build a championship team. Now, you need good veterans. If I have a first-team All-Pro on my team, like Bobby Wagner, I'm not going to be like, I don't know, let's give the young guys a shot. No, I want to win games. I'm going to put the best players out there, but there has to be some middle ground between getting those contributions from young players. Otherwise, you start getting a lot of salary cap dollars wrapped up in a lot of older players.
Yeah, and it's something that you point to with this group that has been a major area of concern. And the reason why is that when you make the choice, and you make a good choice based off of the production that you've seen with Russell Wilson and Bobby Wagner, to make those two the two keystones of your organization, of your team, you know, Russell Wilson being your quarterback of the offense and Bobby Wagner being your middle linebacker of the defense, you know, how do you build around that? And knowing that you're going to pay big salaries to those guys that are going to take up a good chunk of your cap, it puts extra pressure on the need to not only draft well, but the need to play guys that are on cheaper contracts, meaning rookie deals, and you want to see those players outperform their contracts. It's not just playing less, it's not playing lesser players. It is maximizing on the contracts that you're giving guys and getting elevated play that ultimately is the sign or the mark of a really good roster, of a really good front office, and coaching staff. So that has been something that has been a concern, and it hasn't worked out the way that they've wanted it to. Therefore, you've seen a lot of midseason trades. Therefore, you've seen trades for Jadeveon Clowney. You saw the trade for Jamal Adams. All of these are domino effects because you have not been able to establish that good quality depth on your roster with good young talent that has been able to outperform those contracts. And therefore, in free agency, you've elected to go after you've elected to go after volume in terms of how many free agents you're bringing in on cheaper deals rather than going and finding impact at one specific position. And I think that that has been an interesting turn for this organization and what has been different for this organization than what they were doing in, you know, the first half of, you know, the Pete Carroll, John Schneider era.
I'm most curious to see how it translates to what I've always assumed would be a coaching decision. Like, in my mind, it would be a coaching decision how you use someone like Jimmy Graham or someone like Jamal Adams, both of whom were the result of big trades that this team made, the two biggest trades this team has made, the latter obviously being even bigger than the former. But it feels like it's one thing to acquire that guy and say, okay, I want to see him on the field, you know, let's make sure to work him in. Wouldn't John Schneider going to Pete Carroll and saying, hey, I want to see Jimmy Graham be used differently, be overstepping boundaries?
Without a doubt. Without a doubt. But it is something that goes on. It's something that is talked about. But that is where you get into these unique situations where if you make that trade as a GM, it's happened time and time again, where trades are made and the coaching staff doesn't feel like it's a fit at all. And then they're forced to, you know, put a square peg in a round hole. Now, in this regard, that's not true at all because Pete Carroll was very much on board with that trade. But you could run into those situations, no question. And in a normal power dynamic in the NFL, the front office is the one that is in charge of putting together your roster, and the coaching staff has to maximize what the front office gives them on a year-to-year basis. That is a normal power dynamic in the NFL. Now, we've seen here for, you know, over, honestly, going on to two decades, because I'm lumping Mike Holmgren with this and the Pete Carroll, John Schneider era as well, is that there has been great synergy and mesh between head coach and GM and, you know, overall say. And so, you know, here in Seattle, we have gotten a very different viewpoint as to how that works and how that dynamic goes together. And this would definitely be a shift and a change in that power structure that we've seen for 12 years.
I've spent so much time focused on the latter half of that quote from Jeremy Fowler, which is that it may be time for Carroll to concede personnel final say. I haven't even been talking enough about the first part, which is the feeling in some league circles is that Pete Carroll's safe. He's not ready to retire, and the Seahawks would have to have major guts to fire a legend outright. Now, I think that whatever my feelings about how this team needs to change, I think they need to be way better on third down than they have been. I think they need to be way better with not giving up defensive yards the way that they have been. It is hard not to look at that final game and the excitement that Russ and Pete had together and not think like, oh, what if they can make something happen this year? And it's hard for all of my critiques about John and Russ and Pete not to look around the league at the hot mess situation that's happening in a couple other cities, a couple other teams, and not think like, ooh, you also risk getting into that. So I think that is good news for Seahawks fans.
It is good news. And ultimately, look, this is all speculation at this point in time. There's no firm evidence one way or the other in this regard. But, you know, just going down, you know, this road and talking through it, I do believe that it would be, I wouldn't view it as a negative. If that's what happened, I would view it as a positive in terms of, look, this organization recognizes that the status quo has not been good enough over the last, you know, 4 or 5 seasons at least, and things need to change. And we're going to go in this direction, hoping that we get better results. And what we know of John Schneider in this role and that front office group is they are insanely competitive. They are insanely aggressive. They work extremely hard at what they do, and giving them an opportunity to have final say over those, you obviously would be very curious to see what the results of that would look like.
All right, this hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by the Pro Club. Taking a look around the NFL in a bit. News breaking a couple minutes ago that David Culley has been fired as head coach of the Texans. So we'll look at some of those. I know. We'll look at some of those shifting coaching situations coming up in 15 minutes. Before that, though, let's get to headline rewrites.
Extra, read all about it.
Headline rewrites.
Presented by Tila Mortgage.
The real story behind the headlines in today's news with Jake and Stacey.
I think David Culley's the big winner in all this.
Honestly, yeah.
He doesn't have to work for Houston.
You're probably right. He gets a nice little buyout, you know.
Do you remember when we had John McClain on and he said, he goes, Pete Carroll couldn't do anything with this roster. Bill Belichick couldn't do anything with this roster because they are awful. And that's how we ended our interview with him.
It's like, thank you, all John. Right. All right. Headline number one.
Dodge a bullet, Dave.
Headline number one, according to ESPN's Jeff Passan, the Major League Baseball Players Union was not too happy about the proposal they received today from the MLB owners. What is the real headline?
These negotiations starting to sound a little bit like the ones happening in 2020, which means we might not see spring training start on time. Now, that was the implication from Jeff Passan's tweet at the end. He said the start of spring training in peril, like in real question. And I think it's clear that these two sides could not be further apart. And if the first proposal is an indication that at least one side, the owners, clearly unwilling to budge very much on what they're willing to give up or to acquiesce in those deals. So I think that if you're someone hearing this, the report isn't necessarily like, well, what was in the proposal? Although we're all curious. The real headline is that we're all looking at spring training. The real headline is, if this starts to get even more contentious, spring training isn't going to start on time.
Yeah, and that's, to me, the overall takeaway that you have when it comes to, you know, Major League Baseball right now. And it doesn't seem like, overall, that you're going to get this group to change, all of a sudden very quickly. And you're going to have very much a heavy back and forth with this group between both sides, and it is not going to be pleasant. It's going to be contentious, and when you're fighting over something that is just this big and this dynamic in terms of the structure of how everything, the changes that the players' union ultimately wants, yeah, it's going to be a hard-fought battle, and the only question is, how long is it going to remain, and how far is the players' union willing to take this, and are they really truly prepared to enter into a lockout, which all Mariners fans were sitting here going, we hope that's not the case at all, because this is a very, very monumental and important season for the Seattle Mariners.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number two, Quandre Diggs posted on social media that his leg surgery was a success. His estimated recovery time is expected to be 4 to 5 months. What is the real headline?
Quandre Diggs had a major injury before hitting free agency. That's the real headline. Quandre Diggs had a major injury before hitting free agency. The question now, will it affect his contract or not? I don't think it should. I think he has earned the money that he is worth, which is a lot. He was the best defensive player for Seattle, led this team in interceptions 2 years in a row, has 13 over 2.5 years with Seattle. But Brady Henderson, Jake, on with us earlier this hour, said... last hour, said that if there ever was a franchise tag candidate, it would be Quandre Diggs this year.
Yeah, it definitely would be. And I could definitely see that happening. On the flip side of it, though, is look, when you talk about these big contracts that are going to come down, what is the other conversation that we have yet to get into in terms of, okay, DK Metcalf, Quandre Diggs, all these numbers that we're throwing out there? What is the cap supposed to do after this year? We know it's increasing a little bit and it's going back to somewhat normal, but what is it supposed to do in 2023, Stacey?
Go up even more?
It's supposed to balloon. It is supposed to go up so drastically that when you talk about some of these contracts, you could heavily, you know, capitalize and backload your contracts because you know that the salary cap is going to explode. So that to me is another thing that you can keep in your back pocket here. And then when it comes to signing on Quandre Diggs, you could give him a contract that is signing bonus heavy, knowing that you could push some of that money back and backload it. And it still work out favorably for this organization and for this group. So certainly a franchise tag could be on the table for Quandre Diggs. I actually believe that this organization would want to do right by Quandre Diggs after forcing him to play this year without a deal, and Quandre Diggs doing everything the right way. This organization, for the most part, I believe, does everything the right way by the book when it comes to taking care of its players. And that to me would be giving Quandre Diggs a multi-year extension after all the leadership and everything that he's done with this group, if you truly want him on your team moving forward.
Headline rewrites.
Headline number three, as we said probably about 10 minutes ago, Houston Texans have fired their head coach, David Culley, after just one season at the helm. What's the real headline?
Texans players hoping they're next. Because who wouldn't want out of that horrendous organization? Now, that's my real headline, but maybe a realer headline being one that was actually out. This is from Washington Post reporter Mark Maskey, which is with David Culley's firing by the Texans after one season, combined with Brian Flores' firing Monday by the Dolphins, the NFL has one active black head coach, Mike Tomlin, obviously, of the Steelers. The NFL's problem with diversity and representation continues.
You know, it's something that is such a fine line and a fine balance that they are constantly looking through. And to me, when you have a sport that is, you know, so diverse in a lot of aspects and it's not represented on the other side of it from a coaching perspective, there's a lot of questions as to why that is. And to me, this is something that will be an ongoing this will be an ongoing battle that I believe people will be trying to find solution to. And you know, Pete Carroll is one of those coaches. I mean, quite honestly, I mean, you look at his coaching staff, you know, he has done a great job of making sure to give opportunities and give you know, his coaching staff a very diverse look and a very much a diverse, you know, group of voices that can reach every single audience, can reach every single player, no matter what their background is. And I think that that is ultimately what, you know, the NFL should be striving for as they're finding, not only trying to find the right guys, but also making sure that they're giving every opportunity to the right person and not holding any sort of biases towards any individual.
Well, I think that's why what I want to know is, I don't know how many people expected David Culley to be the long-term answer in Houston. It's such a hot mess of an organization. But I wonder if there is now a head coaching candidate available that the Texans want to try to pursue who wasn't previously available, which wouldn't necessarily mean like in, I don't know, Nathaniel Hackett, who was kind of part of that circulation last year, but maybe it does mean a Brian Flores or a Dan Quinn. You know what I mean? Like, I wonder if part of why they moved on from Culley, like, they can't have expected to win games. They have to have imagined that they would finish last in the division and be vying for the first overall pick. But I have to think that that maybe the organization sees a head coaching candidate that is newly available that they want to pursue. I wonder if that's
possibly. And obviously the New England connections there with Nick Caserio and Brian Flores, that makes a ton of sense. But if I'm Brian Flores, why on earth would I want to sign up for that Houston Texans situation?
Absolutely not.
Absolute nightmare, disaster, and you got yourself into one from the beginning, which was the Miami Dolphins. On the flip side, though, if you're Brian Flores, you said, hey, I've gotten myself into a really nasty situation with the franchise that has struggled terribly with the Miami Dolphins, and I was able to turn them into a respectable team. So I might be able to do that again with somebody that I'm very familiar with in Nick Caserio. So on the flip side, maybe that could be a connection and an answer that we're not anticipating.
All right, let's actually take a look around the rest of the league. There's a wild, wild card weekend in store, plus the latest injury news about some of those teams. That's coming your way next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Ross.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by the Pro Club. Let's take a look around the rest of the NFL, see what's happening in the league. We'll start in Indianapolis, where the Colts are not committing to Carson Wentz in 2022. GM Chris Ballard, or as I say, Ballard, was asked about the future of Wentz, and he said, quote, "I'm not going to comment on who will be here next year." Now, not hard to read between the lines there that Carson Wentz's future is in doubt in Indianapolis, at least as a starter. Now, Jake, what are the odds that the Colts make a trade for a big-name player like Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson?
I mean,
the questions, Jake. I've already seen the photoshopped image of Russell Wilson in a Colts uniform on Twitter.
Are you really?
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
I didn't make it.
Look, Carson Wentz obviously held the Indianapolis Colts back. It did not work out the way that they were hoping for. And honestly, it just goes to show that Carson Wentz is just on a heavy downturn in his career. I mean, that was going to be the answer, and that was the conversation. I remember that was my answer going into this season, is that, look, this is the perfect situation for Carson Wentz to be stepping into, and you're going to get a firm answer on whether or not, you know, Philly just completely ruined him or whether he needed a just fresh new situation to get him playing at its best. And unfortunately for Carson Wentz, just never able to recreate the 2017 MVP magic. And now, if you're the Colts, you've got a pretty good roster. You really do. And I would be aggressively searching for a quarterback. And if either one of those two came available, then yeah, I mean, I think the Colts would absolutely be aggressive in trying to snag one of those two. But as of right now, that is pure speculation, and we have no idea whether Aaron Rodgers or Russell Wilson are even being considered on the trade market. And really, it's up to those two guys in terms of voicing that opinion and what they want to do with their careers and what the organizations then, how they respond after that. So, no, this is not something that, the Colts are absolutely going to snag one of these two this offseason. I don't think it's as clear-cut as that.
All right, apparently there's no such thing as a season-ending injury anymore, because a number of stars could make their return with their current teams in the playoffs that have missed a significant amount of time or ended the season with what we all thought would be season-ending injuries. Derrick Henry, one of those guys who could be returning for the Titans. You've got J.J. Watt, who's practicing with the Cardinals. He could be making his return after we all thought his season was done. And you've got wide receiver Juju Smith-Schuster expected to return for the Steelers Sunday in their wild card game against the Chiefs.
Now, you know, the thing I would say that's great news, and obviously getting more firepower is of great help, but is Juju Smith-Schuster going to hurt the team by dancing on any logos before the game? I mean,
maybe
that's my biggest question.
Oh, it'll absolutely happen.
Yeah. Or is him and Jackson Mahomes, are they going to get together and do a little video before him?
Yeah.
I know that would make Curtis Rogers so happy.
I think your head would actually explode, Curtis.
Probably.
Why don't you get a TikTok and have a competing TikTok account?
I don't need to do that.
Okay.
I have a child to raise at home. I've got more bigger responsibilities.
Stacey, you've considered it.
I do have a TikTok account.
Uh-oh.
But I use it to look at funny videos.
You use it to lurk?
I use it to lurk. I don't actually create.
You're not on there doing TikTok challenges?
No, unfortunately not. I'm too old. But yeah. Any hoozle be. Moving on. The Packers will likely get Whitney Mercilus back. As a reminder, they will not play this week as the number one seed in the NFC. They get one more week off before they play in the divisional round.
Now, nice for them, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's such a huge advantage now with the way the NFL is shaped that you get only one team with a first-round bye. To me, that is the... it certainly puts the incentive on getting the number one seed, but I would say in expanding the playoffs, that's the one detriment I believe that's ended up happening. You know, having two teams being able to be well rested was such a huge benefit to either one of those teams, and now only one gets it, makes the road to the Super Bowl significantly harder.
All right, NFL.com has their Super Bowl probabilities for each and every team. The best probability goes to the Green Bay Packers with a 19.3 probability chance to win the Super Bowl. The lowest, well, that one belongs to the Pittsburgh Steelers with a 0.3% chance. Also at a 0.3. Also at a 0.3% chance, the Philadelphia Eagles. 0.4 are the Raiders, who, I don't know why I said this, could beat the Bengals on Saturday. I don't know why I said that. I can't back down now, though. And then the San Francisco 49ers with a 3% shot. The Arizona Cardinals, by the way, go from looking like they're going to win the NFC West to having a 4.1% probability to win the Super Bowl.
You know, and I'm very surprised by all this, right? I mean, look, you got to put out percentages and probabilities and all that, but ultimately you don't play because of the numbers. You don't walk out there and say, here's my probability percentage and here's who wins the game. And that's the beauty of the playoffs, and that's the beauty of the NFL, is that it is any given Sunday, and you are going to see an upset. You are going to see an upset or two. Now, are we going to see three, like Stacey, you suggested yesterday in Hype Train? Well, I don't know about that. That would be extremely rare, and it would be shocking. But I am anticipating that you're going to see an upset, and the one that's I would not be surprised by would be seeing the Arizona Cardinals upset the Rams if Matthew Stafford can't take care of the football.
All right, speaking of head coaching searches, which we were talking about earlier, former Eagles head coach Doug Peterson interviewed with the Chicago Bears. Jake, who seems to you a really likely candidate to get that spot, or who are some of the front runners in the head coaching,
honestly, I can't tell right now. I can't tell in regards to, particular landing spots. Outside of, I think with Denver, it's pretty easy to see who they've kind of narrowed their vision down to. I mean, Brian Flores is a guy that's going to be linked to a lot of jobs, but the more I think about it, the more Houston makes a ton of sense. And Chicago, it's really hard to know exactly the direction that they want to go in. I would assume that they'd want to go, again, with an offensive-minded head coach when the priority should be Justin Fields. But when you have ownership that's so, indifferent towards making Justin Fields your franchise quarterback after you traded up in the first round to get him, it leaves you, scratching your head and wondering what they are eventually going to do. And I do like that potential fit of Doug Peterson being there in Chicago. I think it would be a great fit for Justin Fields, but I don't know if there's been, a narrowed search quite yet in regards to a lot of these jobs, and particularly in Chicago. I believe it's still very, very much open.
All right, last story here in NFL headlines. The Texans have fired David Coley after just one season in Houston. Houston went 4-13 during this time. With the firing of Brian Flores, that means Mike Tomlin is the only black head coach in the NFL right now. It also means, in my opinion, I don't know what the Texans or their fans were thinking Coley could do with that roster in 1 year. I have no idea what their expectations were, because that was a horrible team.
It was, and your original thought of, you know, hey, maybe this was a move by the Houston Texans to buy themselves some time in the next coaching cycle to try and find their guy, I believe is probably more adequate. And, you know, Coley only had a 2-year deal. I mean, when you talk about, you know, where they ultimately thought of Coley, they didn't give him a long-term deal. They didn't give him a typical 3-to-5-year deal. They gave him a 2-year deal. And I think that is very telling in regards to what they felt as an organization, how long Coley's future would be with the Houston Texans as well. And, you know, it's just kind of sad because, you know, David Coley, by everything that I've heard, is a really, really likable guy, really strong leader, but also was probably the weakest coaching candidate that was out there in the last head coaching cycle. And this was an opportunity for him to be able to, I guess, put head coach on your resume moving forward.
All right, a couple details trickling out about those CBA negotiations and the MLB's first offer to players today. We'll tell you what you need to know coming up next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy,
powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
Guys, as a reminder, we are going to have a short show today. Wazoo Hoops pregame starts at 1:30 p.m. and we'll throw you right to that. So get your questions in now for what I need to know. Text any question you have to the Mac and Jack's text line. That number is 206-421-3776. Any question you have, and we'll get to those, our answers, in about 30 minutes here. So after we talk to Kyle, we'll get to those questions. But send them in right now, 206-421-3776. I'll start collecting those. And also, don't forget, you can listen to us on the go or catch up with the show. If you miss it, subscribe to the Jake and Stacy podcast. We're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Please don't forget to rate and review if you do subscribe. Some new information, Jake, trickling in about the owner's Thursday proposal to MLBPA. There was reportedly a meeting between MLB owners and the players' union today, and we saw a tweet from Jeff Passan at around, 12:30 today? It was shortly before timeline, fitting, in which he said, look, there was no new agreement today. Nothing got done. It wasn't expected to happen today, but the players certainly weren't happy about what owners had to offer. So what did owners have to offer? Well, some new information trickling in here. So let's start with this one from Ben Nicholson-Smith of Sportsnet. He says that he's hearing MLB's offer to players today included 14 teams in playoffs. He said that's arguably players' biggest bargaining chip. Owners clearly want expanded playoffs. So something players can do there to try to offer, hey, we'll agree to 14 teams in the playoffs if you change some of the structure about arbitration. Also, Ben Nicholson-Smith adding that he heard MLB owners offered a potential solution to service time manipulation in their proposal. This is what it was. If a highly ranked prospect within the top 150 on prospect lists plays a full year and finishes top five for a major award like MVP, Cy Young, Rookie of the Year, his team gets a bonus draft. That's very confusing to me. I don't exactly know what that means. Curtis, let me know if you do. He continues to
So basically they're incentivizing if a young player
A young player to make his debut earlier if they think he can really make a
and
impact.
If he's successful, then they get rewarded for that move.
Okay. One last thing here. Bottom line, this is also from Nicholson-Smith. As viewed by some on the MLBPA side, today's proposal from owners featured incremental changes and lacked urgency. Not necessarily a surprise that on January 13th, negotiations are moving slowly, but also far from ideal. Because as a reminder for you guys, we're all anticipating that this is something that could look more like 2020 negotiations. Curtis, are you nervous about the start of spring training?
Very. I'm nervous about the start of the season. But right now, I don't see a world in which spring training starts on time, which I believe is scheduled for a month from today. Mm-hmm. Pitchers and catchers would report wherever they may be. But they're just, I think the two sides are so far apart right now that I don't see any world in which they can come to an agreement 1 month from today.
Well, no, and MLBPA might have more power than any other union, but the owners also have plenty of power, and they have the benefit of having things exactly the way they want them right now. They started the lockout to avoid any kind of strike. And I think that, you know, I remember in 2020, we were talking about the power of public perception. And I think the owners can have that on their side, because even though there are plenty of people I talk to that are like, oh, the owners, you know, billionaires, like publicly, a lot of the onus for getting something done kind of falls on the players, the visible party here.
Oh, absolutely. And we all know who some of these players are, but a lot of these owners remain faceless and nameless unless you're in those markets. If you aren't a baseball fan, tell me right now who owns the Minnesota Twins. You don't know. Tell me who owns the Texas Rangers.
Yeah. Meanwhile, tell me the Rangers' best player and the Twins' best player.
Corey Seager.
Yeah.
And then you've got Byron Buxton, Minnesota. You know, the players are the names and the faces that are going to take the biggest hits in this. And I don't know if that's necessarily fair, because the owners seem to be strong-arming the players at a lot of instances here. John Heyman of MLB Network, he reports that Major League Baseball remains dead set against lowering free agency from 6 years to five. Mm-hmm. Part of the concern stems from history of the big stars jumping from smaller markets to big markets when they hit free agency, and belief is this would hurt competitive balance. But I say to that, small market teams are only that because they choose to be.
Yes.
Every team could absolutely spend in the way that the Dodgers and Yankees and Red Sox do,
yes,
but they don't because they like the profits that come in from, you know, everything surrounding the organization. Why would you want to spend $200 million on payroll every single year if you're meeting your budget goals, if you're bringing in the kind of revenue that you're comfortable with? Why on earth would you spend any more than you have to?
Well, and that's what players are trying to de-incentivize, because it would be in players' best interest for those small market teams to spend more. Like, I know that when Rob Manfred came out with that letter when the lockout was first initiated and was like, oh, you know, there are some of these proposals that would hurt the competitiveness and hurt people's ability to win. Whose ability? Because last time I checked, de-incentivizing tanking, like, yeah, it's tanking is one way for any team, not just a small market team, but certainly some smaller mid-sized teams to try to build up and to try to get better if they aren't just willing to shell out money. But it's far from the only way to do that. I see it as more often than not allowing teams to just skate by with like mid-tiered performance is making for a not as competitive league.
Well, yeah, and that's why in baseball you see playoff droughts as long as the Mariners have, as long as you know, the Pittsburgh Pirates have been as bad as they have, because their ownership just has no desire to put together a huge you know, contender in Pittsburgh. I read the other day that the Pittsburgh Pirates, the biggest contract they ever have handed out was to Jason Kendall. Was Jason Kendall 6 years, $63 million, and it was done in like 2000.
See, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
All these teams are owned by billionaires.
Yeah.
Like, it's people choosing not to spend. Now, it's one thing to say, you know what, we're going to start over. We're gonna scrap this. We've got a lot of money invested in veterans that we don't really want to pay anymore. We want to start young. Because the Mariners are now looking at their farm system. So, like, it's fine if the Mariners don't become the biggest payroll in 2022, because they're looking at their younger players saying, like, okay, how many of these guys are we going to have on you know, rookie deals? Or how many of these guys are going to be in here? But after a while, it's like, all right. I mean, players want more money. All of us do. Anyone working anywhere.
Yeah, I don't think that's an outrageous thing
to
say.
And more competitiveness, more teams trying to vie for their services is exactly the MLB world that those players want. So I don't know. It's a sticky situation. I really, really, really hope we don't get what we saw in 2020, which just felt like you're banging your head against the wall waiting for these two sides to come to an agreement in a league that is already hurt by viewership losses. And so the healthiest thing for baseball is to get this thing going and let spring training begin on time and get back to free agency. And I'm not saying that selfishly as someone who covers the Mariners. Absolutely not. No way. No how. Maybe a little bit. But we'll continue to track this for you guys. And we'll ask Kyle. Kyle Glazer's going to join us. We'll ask him a little bit about it, but I don't want to just stick with bad news because Kyle has been all over coverage of the Mariners' top prospects, and he's got some takeaways that should make every single Mariners fan listening right now so excited about 2022 and beyond. Don't take our word for it. Kyle joins us next on Jake and Stacey.